Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans? This is your national championship edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. We hope you guys really enjoyed our coverage from down there in Frisco. I want to thank Trey and Coach Entz and Adam Cofield and the dual interview we got to do with Phoenix and Christian was really fun. And we hope you guys enjoyed North Dakota State's eighth national championship in the last 9 years. To put it into words is really tough, but to help us try and put this into words, Mr. Trevor Gebhardt, a four-time national champion himself. Trev, how are we doing, buddy?
Doing pretty great, Ross. This feeling never gets old, and all is right in the world. So now we can go about our lives feeling good. The Packers got a win as well, so I could say that was one phenomenal weekend of football.
Yeah, I'm a little bit scared. The Twins, my beloved Twins, just signed Josh Donaldson to play third base to move Miguel Sano over to first. Man, you talk about a North Dakota State win, a Vikings loss, a Packers win, and then signing Josh Donaldson. My run of sports luck, I'm really scared that the world could just come crashing down on Sunday because this run is too hot. I'm riding a high that's on something. It's on some other level right now, but we need to get into this. Trev, you mentioned, you know, kind of tweeted, I don't know, half joking, maybe not joking, about sort of shedding a tear, just sort of looking back at this and understanding the absurdity. I've often compared it to like the NCAA video game series from EA Sports, where you'd take over a program and get the best recruiting class every year and win the national championship every year and, you know, maybe drop 7-8 games in a decade. It's like actually what North Dakota State is doing. I mean, it's truly wild.
So I might shed a tear just for the simple fact that you brought up NCAA football. Yep.
Yeah, rest
hopefully that's back in a few years. But anyway, yeah, man, I mean, it was a little dusty over there at the neighbor's house when we were tailgating. Of course, watched the game. The nerves and the heart rate was up a little bit towards the end. But once that high kind of comes down of that feel good, you know, kind of have a legacy that's continuing on. You can't put it into words. I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, it doesn't mean you've necessarily peaked in life, but it's something that you can always look back on and you have something to anchor to. Because a lot of people strive to do what you're setting out to accomplish, even just one time. And the fact that it's continuing on and on and on and on and on just goes to show that the way of life and the way that the type of people that come into that program and that community approach their day-to-day business can take you a long, long way, especially when you take a look at recruiting class rankings. Rob tweeted that out earlier about recruiting class rankings and what the final segment rating is, and that's basically outperforming what people think about you. And it's just a testament to a whole lot of people, even the fans. I mean, I know that gets said a lot from players and former players, but it's really the truth. It doesn't happen without that fan support, because you know people are enjoying it. You know people that they're getting hope from the type of efforts that you're putting in. So it's never happened in sports. You know, I sent that to you earlier, my midweek thoughts. So those of you that read that, you'll probably see that again. Kind of reiterating that fact. Yep. Tomorrow. So, I mean, man, it's just cool because I for me, it's like, I think back when I was a kid and I've shared this story maybe once on the pod, and I first wrote about it on Facebook after my last game against Illinois State in 2015. ironically how life comes full circle. App State, when they won three in a row, I knew that they had won a couple. They go and beat Michigan. It's the most famous upset in college football history. I have an opinion on what the biggest one is, which ironically, in my opinion, is James Madison. But, that for me personally, that inspired me to want to do something like that, to make a wave in college football. At that time, it was 2007. So I'd have been a sophomore. And, you know, I was aware that I was probably going to be playing college football. To what level, to what capacity, I didn't know. But I thought, man, that's super cool. And they made a splash and a wave that changed college football forever. They truly did. And that's why people always reference that as the biggest upset. Well, you fast forward 6 years later, spring ball before the 2013 season. And we had 1-2, of course, at that point. And the head coach of those App State teams, Jerry Moore, was in our meeting room talking to the team, talking about, don't go tie our record. Don't be obsessed with that. Go beat it. And that had always stuck with me. And, you know, to me, it's just the fact that that was after a repeat. And now you got 8 out of 9. Enjoy it while you can, because unfortunately, things don't last forever. It's not going to end anytime soon, knock on wood. But just super cool and super happy for these kids, because I know exactly what they've been through to get to this point.
It is really cool, to kind of get to know these kids over the years and cover them and work with them on a professional level and tell their stories has been, you know, one of the great joys of my life, to be honest. It's just been so much fun for us and to watch and be a small part of, where this group has been able to get, and just, like I said, to kind of be their storyteller and do the best that we can do to shed light on this truly, truly incredible thing that's going on in Fargo. Like I said, it's just one of the joys of my relatively, if you will, young life. Couple of really quick news bits to just rattle off briefly. NDSU, as they are kind of want to do, had a little bit of attrition. They lost a couple of guys. I think it was 4 guys off of the fall roster, in addition to some guys that were, let go or left the team during the season. But I believe the guys that are gone are wide receiver DJ Baptist, who was kind of a taller, really interesting wide receiver prospect that was brought in from the Frisco area with Braylon Henderson in the late signing period last year. Safety Jackson Enns, who I believe was I think he came in with Kaiser and those guys. I think he was a sophomore. He might have even been a recruiting class before. My sources tell me that Jackson Enns is headed to the WIAC, which would be the Division III conference that has, Wisconsin Whitewater, Wisconsin Eau Claire, et cetera, really high level Division III football. Center Joe Schreiber, who was a high level recruit from the Twin Cities area, somebody that they really thought was in their future, and was a scholarship kid. And running back Braden Zuroff, a walk on from last year's class as well, are all gone. And that happens every year. Trev, you've been through it. These guys are, there are guys that want to do it, and then there are guys that really want to play college football and absolutely do what's best for you. That hats off to them. If it isn't going to happen at NDSU and you get passed up on the depth chart by a younger player, it just doesn't seem like you're going to be, that 2-3 year starter you thought you were going to be. Go do your thing, or don't, or stick around and win titles. That's kind of the catch 22 there of being a Bison, is not everybody can play. So that's what was going on there. And then just for scheduling purposes, guys, there is massive NDSU basketball stuff coming up this week. Tomorrow night, the Bison are going to host a South Dakota team that many picked second in the league to North Dakota State, not necessarily living up to that so far. And then Saturday, the University of North Dakota comes to the Shack for a little hoops. They're at 2 p.m. Need to see you at the Shack to make sure the Fighting Hawks go down. Try and get that place. We're just talking about the old BSA. Try and get that place packed to the rafters like they used to pack it for Ben Woodside. All right, Trev, let's get into the game. Let's do some highlighting of the moments of that game. And then I got to tell you, I mean, we just need to start the show a little bit here off by thanking you guys. We dropped a question on Twitter and a question in one Bison fan group, not even our own page. Just like, hey, we got 15 minutes real quick. If you see this in the next 15 minutes, send us any questions you might have for the show. We have like 11 questions in 15 minutes at a time where people aren't really even on social media. So we really appreciate the way that Bison fans respond to us. It really is humbling and it's awesome. Okay, so Trevor, walk me through. We need to set the stage for everyone. Walk me through what you were doing, where you watched the game, because sadly, in your first year as a media professional, you weren't able to make the trip.
Yeah, it's a little sad. I mean, I definitely obviously wish I was there. A lot of work going on, a lot of good stuff happening there. My travel schedule is going to ramp up very fast, so just a lot of meeting prep. Just couldn't find the time off, just based off the need that we have there as a business and a company. But so what we did is we ushered in about 20 new Bison fans in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Some of my buddies and their wives and their kids included. Those of you that are frequent readers of the Midweek Takes, you'll see an interesting video of a young Bison fan who is 8 years old. So something to look forward to there. So what we did is we just kind of had a nice little tailgate, started at 10 a.m. A bunch of people came over. We made pancakes, eggs on the griddle, had a charcoal fire pit rolling, pancakes, eggs, bacon, sausage, coffee, you name it. And it was, I don't know, it was a good time, man. It was a lot of community, and started telling Bison stories to the guys, started explaining the West tailgating lot to them. And a lot of them have actually wanted to come up to Fargo. A lot of them are college football junkies. One of them had talked to me about Brock Jensen before I had even said anything. He asked me about Brock. I'm like, I was the best man at his wedding. What do you want to know? So those guys were excited. I brought Bison gear for all of them. They got into it. They were high-fiving, going nuts. And they're all Clemson fans, so unfortunately last night didn't work out for them. But we definitely sucked a few people in. They got a little bit exposed to the culture, and they're all about it. No, so that was pretty cool. Just a regular good time in a neighborhood.
That's great. All right, so now we've got the stage set. I was, sports people, sports fans, if you will, whatever, get a little bit superstitious. And ever since I, started running Bison Report, I've been on the field for every game, every time in Frisco. We have, a limited budget. People understand that. I'm always trying to shill memberships and stuff. And we just want to keep doing the best that we can for you folks. And so it turns me into kind of a man of many hats on game day. I'm our photographer for the most part. Incredibly thankful to Eric Bunnell for being our video guy. But I'm our photographer. I'm our social media guy. I'm the analyst and sometimes even the reporter. So it's not uncommon for me to be on the field for that game. And I woke up and looked at that weather outside and said, "This is a press box kind of day." So I was up in the box. Actually sent our intern Micah down with the camera after my 30-second instructional on how to take some pictures for sports reasons. But so big shouts to Nikon for our expensive camera, because even intern Micah was able to just get that thing rocking and rolling after about a 30-second explanation. But I was up in the booth and just wondering, Trev, how you were feeling after that James Madison opening script, because it was absolutely dynamite. They had the right play calls in. NDSU was kind of on their heels. Middle of the field run defense, middle of the field pass defense was a struggle early, and they stormed down the field and got seven.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't encouraging, obviously. I mean, anytime a team takes half the quarter off the clock or half the time off the clock in one quarter and they run 17 plays and go 86 yards, that's Kansas State-esque, you know, the drive, as people want to say. So it kind of deflates you a little bit. But here's the thing. It's 90% of those are scripted. Teams get up for these games. They've had 3 weeks to prepare. So you know what? Good for them. That means they were ready. And they threw the first punch. The biggest thing for me was, okay, how do you respond? And, okay, half the plays, half the time, game's tied. And number five did his thing. He got involved early and often. So that was encouraging, and I knew that it was going to be a heavyweight title fight after that point. But, yeah, that first drive was a little bit eye-opening. I'm thinking, okay, up front, I was expecting this to be a stalemate the whole game, and that was not the case on drive one. The D-line, to be honest, they were getting blown out. They were getting beat on every third down. James Madison was basically getting any yardage up front and in the A-gap that they wanted. So just a few adjustments needed to be made. Not a big deal, but, yeah, you go anytime you see an opening drive go 17 plays against the Bison, that's not what people are used to seeing, especially when you're playing a high-quality team like James Madison, who is favored. So, you know, that can make some people nervous. I necessarily wasn't. I knew there was a lot of game. And it's one of those things where I've seen it 1,000 times where the opponent is getting up and they play really, really well for at least a quarter, and then it tends to taper off after that point.
Yeah, the only, if you want to call it, concern on my part was just that a lot of these national championship games, like the two teams feel each other out for a couple of drives and maybe grab a first down, maybe grab two and flip field position a touch, but it's usually punt, punt, and then we kind of get going. There was no punt, punt in this one because North Dakota State roared back with Tyler Roll having a pretty fantastic script of his own, and NDSU ran their quarterback 30 times, and I believe the tailbacks only got 10 carries in this game. Asked Coach Entz about it after the game. He told me that they just did not see quarterback run. Not that they saw on tape that JMU couldn't defend quarterback run. They literally saw on tape that JMU just wasn't defending quarterback run because nobody that they were playing against was running it, which is, you know, interesting, but could have just kind of been a sign of the times in the CAA. So you're in a situation where they're not entirely familiar, and you know what? There's not a game next week. And it's not like they want Trey Lance to get hurt, but if it does happen, he's got a good 7 months to get ready, probably 8 months to get ready for Oregon. So just a phenomenal game plan, I thought, and a great answer back by North Dakota State offensively.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you have, like you said, that was what I was expecting. The guys that I was watching the game with, they asked what I expect in the first drive. I said, at most, the team's going to get one first down. And that's how these games go. You haven't played in a few weeks, so the nerves are rolling. But both teams showed up ready to play. And I think that was very good for just the division overall because you had the most people tune in ever for an FCS football game. And I kind of half expected that because of the storylines between North Dakota State and James Madison. You move to a more primetime slot being on ABC versus ESPN at that same time. And I don't know. I thought the show that was put on, and especially the way that it started, couldn't have been asked to be played out better for the subdivision overall.
For sure. You look at 2.7 million people watching that game. The most people to ever watch a Bison football game ever. I would assume that that way more people watched NDSU play Duke in men's basketball, but that's probably more about Duke than it is about North Dakota State. This was a battle early, but then NDSU was able to create some space, and they were able to create some space due in part to just a phenomenal fake field goal call by Coach Entz. So I'll try and break it down, and then I want to ask you about this a little bit too, Trevor. So what Coach Entz had seen is if the field goal unit was on a hash and they kicked 50, listen to our friends, Jeff Culhane and Jeremy Jorgensen over on the Insiders. They had Jimmy Football himself on. And Jorgie, where they were asking Jimi Hendrix about what the deal was, and they said 55 out of the 57 times that they had done kick D, so extra points and field goals, they had lined up 4-1 side and 7-1 side. If it was on a hash, obviously it was 4 to the boundary and 7 to the field, so they could overload and try and get a kick block. Well, NDSU noticed that, and Coach Blazek started drawing up these field goal blocking schemes, because you count the long snapper, they're going to be 5-on-4, or at the very least, they're going to be 4.5-on-4 with nobody accounting for Hendrix. And you guys know what happened, obviously. Jimmy Football goes up the left side untouched into the end zone. And I, Trev, what I want to talk to you about, or what I want to ask you about, is kind of take us behind the scenes of something like that, or not necessarily even something specifically like that. Check on like the just how prepared NDSU athletes are, NDSU football players are, to do something like that and study 57 different kick defenses and just the level of detail that I'm not sure that the fan base like fully grasps.
Right. So there's a reason we call it winter camp. Those 3 weeks, because it really is a winter camp. Now it's dialed back physically because you can't put yourself through that same grueling process that you do in August for fall camp. But you got to think about this. You have 3 weeks to prepare for one team solely. And your whole thing is about making sure you're healthy, making sure you're getting your reps in, getting out and recovering. The rest of the time, you're finding an edge to beat your opponent because that's your job. And you can only do so many walkthroughs, so many reps, so many plays on offense and defense before you almost get bored. You know exactly what is going to show up in certain formations, at least for the start of the game. You know, teams adjust and you've got to be able to react off that. And that, of course, takes preparation too. But even as a coaching staff, they're spending even more time on it than us as players. So you'd get so ingrained in with it and so obsessed with it that you will look for any edge that you can possibly find. Little tells that say, okay, if a corner has a certain foot ahead of another one, what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to come down and press, or is he going to back up? There's always little tells that you can find. And just noticing that it probably reminded a lot of Bison fans of when we did the fake punt with Matt Voigtlander in 2011. For the first national championship, that kind of blew the game open there. And then the next play, we scored off gap screen. That play was practiced every day for 2 weeks. That fake punt was. We knew we were running it. As soon as the time was right, we knew we were running it because whatever the coaches saw, that was so long ago, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I would venture to guess it was something very similar. Coach Polisek was adamant about it. And anytime that man is adamant about something, it is going to happen. So, that's where, we did it back in my time. And I would, obviously based off what the coaches gave you for feedback, as far as what they noticed, that's how in depth you get, because you go through every game and you try to find any little tell. So you go through game one. Okay. They line up for a field goal block and obviously you're loaded to one side. That's kind of off. That's not, it's not a balanced attack. So you're like, okay, you just chart it and then you keep going. And once you get to game two and game three, you can start seeing little trends, because then once they start getting to conference play, teams have their identity spoken for. Well, if you haven't done your homework and gone back to those week ones, week twos, and week threes, sometimes teams will give away things that they do later on in the year. Bill Belichick did it against the Jets with some obscure rule with the clock running down, and Mike Vrabel used it against him. He did his due diligence on just watching the tape and finding, okay, what do they do well? What don't they do well? And then you find ways to exploit it. It's not rocket science, but it does become so obsessive that you almost get bored with it, because you know almost everything about the other team, that you have to find ways to get creative to gain an advantage, because otherwise it feels like you're walking through mud as far as making progress in dissecting your opponent.
Right. Okay. So I really appreciate that, because just the detail, the level of madness that these guys get into. And my man Blazek is an absolute scientist. I love him. Love the energy that he brings to the program. He's just a phenomenal coach. I would assume he's a phenomenal recruiter as well. Haven't, you know, had a chance to talk to a ton of the guys that he's recruited, but just a home run hire there to get the, you know, associate head coach from Rutgers and the offensive line guy with that level of energy and brings that much juice is, it was a big deal for Coach Entz for sure. A little bit, you know, if we're going to be critical, and like Coach said, they have not had a perfect game. I would say that end of the half clock management was an issue. They had a chance to kind of step on the neck, even going down and getting three before half would have been stepping on the neck, I think, and then get the ball, punt, and James Madison immediately scores and turns the game kind of back into the competitive phase, if you were. What were you feeling during the third quarter?
I had flashbacks of Illinois State.
Yeah, I bet.
I did. I mean, I was trying to explain to these guys, and I couldn't because that game obviously brought out a lot of emotions, especially replaying it back in my head. Very, very similar. We had a big lead, had a chance to step on their throat, and I hope he's not listening. He did have a chance to redeem himself, and I reveal what he said after the game. But Ashley Thornton, when he dropped the pick, that could have gone for six. It would have ended it. The game was over. And thankfully, kid deserves it because he is just one awesome guy. Love the dude dearly. Got to redeem himself by ripping the ball off. I can't remember whose hands, but ripped the ball out of their hands, sealed the game for us, and we go on to win fourth straight. We're on the plane afterwards, and I was sitting next to him, and we were just kind of talking and, you know, reminiscing whatever. And he's like, Trev, if we would have lost that game, he goes, I don't know if I would have been able to live with myself. And I'm like, I get it, man, but it's not a one-man show, you know. It's not – you can't just blame one guy for it, but luckily that wasn't the case. But I was – replaying all of those memories back in my head as soon as they got a field goal to cut it to eight, and then all of a sudden it's back up to 15, and then there's a touchdown after a you know 10 play drive, whatever it was, to cut it back to eight with 6 minutes, 7 minutes to go, and then they get the ball back. So yeah, it was a lot more heart-wrenching on this side. So I am very sorry for what we put you all through in 2014, 2015, because believe me, it's much easier on the playing side than it is just on the watching side.
Yeah, your hands start to get sweaty. You start pacing and stuff. Life as a fan is tough. We've talked a lot about that. Your transition from being a player to a fan, you're always a big Packers guy. So even when you were playing, you and I would watch games together and you would go through the emotions of a fan, but this is different, you know, now that you're only a softball superstar and you know, obviously nothing else at the moment. So, okay, you get through that third quarter, and third and 23, walk me through your thoughts as that play developed and just your reaction when Trey Lance goes 50 yards to the crib on third and 23.
So, you know, I figured we would talk about this play as soon as it happened. I don't know, man. Like, I don't expect that. I don't think anybody did, but on the same time, it's like, it's number five. He's the best player in FCS football. If there's one player that can make that play, it is Trey Lance. So obviously huge swing of momentum because James Madison gets the ball back at that point in time versus basically getting the wind knocked out of their sails. That's a completely different ball game. Completely. And I know there's woulda, shoulda, coulda, there's if scenarios, whatever. We could go on and on all day. But a play like that is clearly a landmark point that you have to point out in highlights that changes the whole complexities of the game. No different than their special teams return. What was that in the fourth? Was that the fourth quarter? They had that long punt return.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yep. So, you know, it's plays like that you're looking at, but anytime, third and 23 and you run for 50 plus. Yeah, I would say that, you know, swings, if you looked at that ESPN chart, I would venture to guess that you saw a nice blip towards the green after
you talking about win probability.
Yeah.
Yeah. The win probability. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'll actually grab that here, as we're talking and give you the exact change. But so I want to talk to you about two more things because we've got a ton, to get into with these questions and we're already approaching the 30 minute mark and we, you know, it's not above Trevor and I to give you a, you know, a jumbo size pod. We appreciate doing that for the folks. Maybe we can get your morning commute and your afternoon commute, whatever it is that we can do for the good people. But we've got a ton to get to, so we'll kind of take that as we go. The one thing I want to break down, obviously, is then the Jimmy football interception, the irresponsibility, if you will, of Mr. Football leaving his man and going and getting that pick and sending North Dakota State to the locker room with a title. Go through what you think his process was, your own emotions at that moment. I mean, walk us through that entire thing.
So a kid like that, I mean, clearly very proud of him, very deserving. And it just kind of puts the feather in the cap and the old seal stamp down for his legacy, number one. And it's just, it epitomizes who Jimmy Football was in his career. For North Dakota State, the Renaissance man for us, very, very smart football player. And I think that's why it's so indicative of the type of player he was. He is so smart. He's so ingrained. He knew exactly what was about to happen. You know, I think he knew that he was probably risking something there, but he's not going to make a decision that fast and turn on the ball that fast without being very confident in what he's choosing to do. And ultimately it sealed his team another national championship. So, I just think that if you watch that play and you break it down, that one play, it's crazy how one play can define a career, but that defined and summed up his career, I think, about perfectly. And he even said something about it, that when he left his man, he knew it was the right choice or something. I don't know where I saw
that. Yeah, post-game press conference. Yeah,
maybe. Okay, so I was thinking maybe I dreamt it or something, but just super happy for the kid because he came in as a quarterback. He's gotten moved all over the place, and he is just the ultimate team guy. He's a senior. It's his last play. Man, it's what you script up, and especially as good of a kid as he is, those are the type of kids, and we got a lot of them in Fargo, but those are the type of kids, especially in their last game, that you want to see those type of moments happen for.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't be more pleased for the young man. Was a phenomenal interview during his entire career. Not that that necessarily matters, but I mean, it's just polite and courteous and gave, you know, insightful answers. And you know what, if guys give me insightful answers, it means that you, the fan, get the insightful answers and you, you know, kind of get a better understanding of what's going on. And it helps us tell their story, which is really the whole point of what we do. So the answer, by the way, Trev, is it went from 85% win probability to 95% win probability. So it went up 10. ESPN at that point with 15 minutes left in the game, you're up 8, you have the ball. They already, FPI had picked, you know, had leaned towards NDSU. So they're pretty confident in the Bison up 8. But that just about slammed the door shut. I know watching the game, it didn't feel like that slammed the door shut just because of how that baby ended. But, the folks at ESPN, as far as their numbers are concerned, were pretty darn confident in the Thundering Herd after that Trey Lance run. And I think we have to address, or I want to address with you, kind of the elephant in the room, which was that post-game press conference comment from Ben DiNucci. I picked up on it, put it on our Twitter immediately at Bison Report, because I was like, oh, that's inflammatory. That's going to be something that's discussed. People are going to want to, you know, read into that and discuss it. So, if you haven't been living under a rock, DiNucci sits down. I can tell from the front row, this kid is not happy, which he probably shouldn't be, you know, just through a game ceiling interception. But his attitude was very different than Riley Stapleton's and Rondell Carter's. They were more reflective, more appreciative. And DiNucci let's see if I can, well, I'm not going to grab the full quote because it's going to take forever. But the bottom line of the basis of what he said was, we did not, they did not win that game. We lost it. We, you know, too many penalties, then sort of half-ass blamed the refs, then backed that off, said NDSU won with trick plays. And then the thing that everybody is holding on to right now is that North Dakota State out-physicaled them, and then basically just said, you know what, I don't want to talk about it. So what was your thoughts on his comments and kind of the whole vibe of that post-game press conference from the JMU quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, it's hard to, you know, interpret something from one instance. I mean, his head's clearly not the most clear. He just had a very emotional letdown. I mean, I'm sure that's a moment he's dreamed about his whole life. He transfers to JMU to be in a moment like that and go win a national title, and he ultimately fell short. And he's taken little bits and pieces of the game and applying it and blanketing over the whole thing. That's how I know his head's kind of cloudy. I mean, they did dominate up front for the first drive on offense, and that was it. There was no out physical. You go look at the play where there was nine buys and pushing Trey Lance for a first down, and there was three James Madison guys just kind of standing there. I think the way the press conference was handled by him individually and the way that that play defined the first half, I think that's the difference in the two programs right now. You know, James Madison's very much the second best program in FCS football right now. I don't think there's any doubt, but the difference in the programs is that. And it's not so much of passing blame, and it's more about the team. It's we, us, and our, not me, myself, and I. And I think that adversity moment kind of reveals where his mindset truly lied in it. That's not to say he's back here. That's not to knock him. That's not to say that, you know what, maybe he was a little bit out of character because of the emotional tie behind that situation. So very tough for him to sit down and have to answer those questions. But yeah, the way it was repeated in different capacities with the refs, you know, physical, we lost the game. They didn't beat us. Just, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure he'll look at that and go, I wish I could have that one back. But like I said, it does tell a lot as far as where the programs are at, because you wouldn't hear that in a post-game press conference if the roles were reversed. And that I'm very confident in. And if it was, it would be addressed by the teammates. And it had probably been addressed by the teammates long before they would have been put in that situation, because that's just the type of kids that get put into the program, and that's just the type of culture that we like to protect as players, former players, and everybody involved, just because we know that, hey, you know what? Somebody beats you. Like when James Madison beat him in 2016 in the semis, they were a better football team that day, straight up. You know, there was nothing else. There was the questionable offsides called that day. But you know what? James Madison was the better football team that day, and they deserved to go on and play in Frisco against Youngstown that year. So, to me, it boils down to that it just epitomizes the culture as a whole between the two programs, and why you have the difference of, okay, James Madison has done it once, and why you've seen North Dakota State do it consistently for a decade.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed my end of it. Like, my thing is, if NDSU would have lost and Five would have said that, I would have fallen out of my chair. I mean, I would have legitimately.
It wouldn't happen.
It just wouldn't happen. So, enough dumping on the kid, though. Like, I needed to point it out because it was really inflammatory. And frankly, if I didn't point it out, someone else was going to do it. But the kid was just incredibly emotional and understandably so, for sure. I mean, I couldn't imagine throwing a pick in that spot, you know, the year after throwing five picks to basically knock your team out of the playoffs when they also thought they were pretty good. So anyway, all right, well, let's dive into these questions. Trev, the way that we're going to do this, because we're already at the 39-minute mark, is I'm just going to take one or two or whatever, and then there are some that I'll ask you, but we're not going to both give our take on each one because it's just going to turn into a 90-minute pod that way. All right, so Steve asks, will any of the Bison coaches be moving on in the offseason? I'm going to take this one. I really don't think so. Right now, what you have, and I think that might have been part of the strategy in hiring them, is you've got two extremely young coordinators and a bunch of coaches that are super bought in. You didn't see a ton of movement when Klieman was the coach. You saw a lot of movement under Bowl, but the staff really stuck together. I'm friendly with a number of these guys because I live out in Oxbow, and they all are, that's part of their kind of compensation package from the university is to be able to bring their families out to Oxbow. And the important thing, and I'm learning this now going on my second year of marriage, is these wives love Fargo, and that is a big deal. It's very important to retention for coaches is that mama's happy. And a lot of these wives are just loving Fargo. I don't see anybody moving on, specifically not corners. You know, we can kind of address this one, Trev. I'll let you get in on this one as well too. But the idea that Trey Lance might transfer, I'll take it and then I'll kick it to you. Here are my thoughts. I firmly believe Trey Lance is going to be a Bison for the next two seasons. I think he'll end up playing all four, but I could not possibly imagine Trey Lance going up, leaving a school that has sent three straight quarterbacks to the NFL. The last two have been drafted, one of whom is a perennial MVP candidate, and losing a year of college football, because unless he has a degree in his hand, he would lose a year of college football. I think that the Nexus year, the year that's important, is his final season. If he continues on the developmental path that he's on now, I think he could be viewed as a first-round guy, second-round guy, after his fourth year at NDSU, which would be his third year playing. He would then have a decision, stay at North Dakota State to try and win another championship, maybe grad transfer somewhere for 1 year, or head straight to the NFL. I actually think that I would rank the likelihood of that, stay at NDSU, then go to the NFL, and then grad transfer. I've heard the Oklahoma thing. They just got Spencer Rattler. They're going to be more interested in Derek King. I mean, Spencer Rattler is the number one quarterback in the country from a recruiting standpoint. And I know we think Trey is good, but they have a five-star kid who's the exact same class as Trey. They're just not going to do that. And I tell you what, Kansas State's not going to do it either. That's the other school I hear. K-State might get Trey. If Chris was going to try to get Trey, he would have done it last year. And frankly, they just signed a four-star kid, their first four-star quarterback signee in a million years. He was the son of former Packers quarterback TJ Rubley. The kid's a stud. They've got one more year left of Skylar Thompson. They like Jaren Lewis, the quarterback that was originally committed to NDSU. It's not happening. Trev, do you have any other thoughts on this constant Trey gonna maybe go thing?
No, I mean, I'm kind of in the same camp as you. You know, he's in such a good position right now, looking at who's kind of pulling him along. Randy Hedberg is a phenomenal football coach. He played in the NFL. He's gotten his last two guys drafted. It's a pro-style offense. You're basically taking command of the whole thing. You get the green light. You can make checks. Most colleges don't do that. And I would venture to guess that if he did take any sort of transfer, it would be a grad transfer. He's too smart, too talented, and he would not want to lose a year of eligibility. And the only reason I think a grad transfer is even a possibility is because, okay, he did this his freshman year. Okay, whatever happens in his sophomore and junior year, he's got his degree in hand. Okay, does he win the Walter Payton Award two more times? Does he win it one more time? Does he win two more national championships? Does he go undefeated as a starter throughout, you know, these next 2 years? Whatever happens, I don't know. But let's say it keeps tracking on the same trend it was after we saw against Butler to where we saw it end in Frisco. If he stays on that same path, he won't have a lot more to accomplish at this level of football. And he might want to say, guys, I want to go play at the highest level possible for a year. Similar to Vernon Adams. Now, I don't necessarily agree with Vernon Adams' decision, but he was just trying to give himself a better position to be exposed. Now, what makes it interesting is that NDSU has such a good brand in the NFL's eyes and the NFL scouts' eyes because of how we play the game, that that preconceived notion that you're tough, physical, and smart is already there. And he definitely hits all those things. That's not to say this a fake thing or whatever, but the fact that you say I played football for the Bison in that football world instantly builds a lot of credibility. Now, if he were to go to like an Oklahoma or something like that, I mean, yeah, you don't just lose who you are, but there's just something to be said about being a part of this place when it's like, okay, this guy did it, this guy did it, this guy did it, at a much smaller scale, but they were still able to get noticed and make themselves well off afterwards. Now, like I said, if he goes two more years and doesn't lose a game, wins the Walter Payton another time or two, I would not have any issue with the kid of wanting to go see, okay, what else can I do with my college career? Especially if he has his degree in hand, because he would deserve every opportunity. And at that point, hopefully you've got the next guy up that is looking to replace him and make his own mark in Fargo.
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, we're on the same page. If he wants to stay a Bison, great. If he wants to go pro, great. If he wants to see what he could do. And that, the other thing too is, guys, honestly, this is not – when they talk about, when John Gruden waxes poetic about NDSU's system being a pro system and having guys ready to play, that's not a joke. That, you know, it's different than a lot of like college systems. Like Flex RPO system is a college system at Minnesota. Oklahoma runs a pretty college system with that run and shoot. Now there are aspects of it that people have been salivating to get Lincoln Riley to bring to the NFL, but a lot of teams are running college schemes. North Dakota State isn't. I understand it's not the highest level of college football, whatever. But, yeah, it's just the things that were said about Carson Wentz when he came out in NDSU's program still apply to Trey Lance. All right, real quick, Gordon Hansen asks, who's going to an all-star game? You've got Tuska and Ellison at the Shrine Game and Zach Johnson to the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, that is what we know right now. Jonas asks, can NDSU win 9 titles in 10 years? I would say that that's pretty likely, especially if you head over to Bison Report right now and check over the two deep there on the way too early preview. It's a pretty phenomenal team coming back next year. Here's one for you, Trev, that I'd like to ask because he was a receiver. Dave from Minot asks, really concerned about Polk coming into the game. They do anything special to make him a non-factor? Were you surprised JMU played zone? Oh, second part of the question. Were you surprised that JMU was in zone on 3rd and 22 to start the fourth? I'm gonna say no. I mean, that was the Lance run on 3rd and 23. You're almost always going to be in zone. But the question about Polk, what did you see? I just thought, as you know, they had Stapleton outside and mostly Polk in the slot, and that's Jabril Cox's region.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're saying, like, what was the question again about covering him?
Right, what, he's an 1,100-yard right. guy, and they were a 2-to-1, they were a 2-to-run run to pass. So it's not like he was an 1,100-yard guy on EWU. He was 1,100-yard guy in a pro-style set.
Yeah, I mean, it's not David Johnson. I mean, you know, he's a really good player, but I mean, I guess I'm not exactly – I mean, he's not – to me, he's not a threat vertically as far as taking the top off, especially when you have 42 over the top of him. So, to me, that's a matchup thing. That's not too concerning for me. He wasn't as going to be as big a factor to me Stapleton. Stapleton. Because that guy's a dude.
Stapleton,
yeah. He caught a pass early on in the game, and I was telling the guys that I was watching the game with, I'm like, you wait, he is going to be good, because they're like, man, that was a good route, and I'm like, just, it gets better, like, unfortunately. But yeah, no, he was the only concern I had, and then his brother, the tight end, who's obviously a sure-handed guy, but yeah, as far as being vertical, to me, I was confident in the matchup more than anything on NDSU side.
For sure, yeah, Stapleton, man, Ants is ready to see him graduate, and he said that after the game. And if you just watched only his games against NDSU, his two performances, you'd be like, oh, that's a third round pick. You know, that kid was kind of at that level. All right. Two more. We're actually, folks, if you did ask, we're going to take care of these in another pod. We will answer these questions. In fact, we're just going to go with the two here that were right away on Twitter. Andrew asks, in 2020, how do they fix the hole at corner and D line? Basically then goes on to clarify and saying, are transfers possible, is his question. I would say that there is more of a shot at a defensive tackle JUCO, or maybe a drop down if they're interested in that. They are going to lose Jack Darnell. They are going to lose Cole Karch, who was their biggest interior pass rush guy. NDSU is not a big transfer school, but if they feel a little bit nervous about, you know, it's mostly kind of walk-on kids and Lane Taylor on the inside and then some young kids like Dylan Evan and Javier Derrett. I think they like Derrett a lot. I like Derrett a lot. I think he's going to be an excellent one tech for them, really plug up the middle. But that's what I could see at corner. They did take three corners they feel really good about last year. So they've spent a full year in a program. You go look at what Omar Brown did for Northern Iowa, first team all conference as a true freshman. You can play corners early because it's an extremely demanding position physically, but way less demanding mentally than like linebacker or safety. So many of the things you have to do are just physically difficult and not necessarily mentally difficult. I know they love Terrell Hall, and two other names to look at for sure are Gennaro Okama and Anthony Coleman, who I think could really do some damage at the nickel position. I think they feel good about Talbert, obviously feel great about Josh Hayes, and then Jaden Price and those three kids that redshirted this last year, especially Terrell Hall. I think they're going to be able to just roll with those corners. And the other part about that is they like Dawson Weber, and you've seen North Dakota State play plenty of three safety nickel over the years. Dawson Weber, Michael Tutsi, and James Kayser, I think they're going to be absolutely fine there. And then the last one is, will Cordell move inside to guard to get Sundell on the field? I don't think so. I think that they're going to, they've been talking about the Kubis brothers. The oldest one, I think, is Zach. He was rotating in already this season and spelling some of the interior offensive linemen. I think that I'll be very surprised, and I'm sure I'll talk to Blazek about it over the course of the offseason, have a better idea for you guys, but I'd be really, really surprised if they didn't keep the exact same line and just plug Kubis in for Johnson, because left tackle, left guard, center, right tackle to all continue that continuity and just have to change one guy when these guys have become pretty darn good at their spots and it was already a dude you were rotating in, I think that's going to be the answer. All right, Trev, anything else from you, buddy?
No, just, I mean, for me, it was fun to see it from this side. I mean, I know when you and I first talked about it, when you had first asked me to come and join you, really didn't know what to expect. We kind of laid out what we wanted to put out for content, and then we kind of left it at that, and we just kind of ran with it. Some things we did well, some things that I want to improve on. Just like anything, you can always get better, and then some exciting things that we're trying to get in the works for everybody else to bring in more people and more eras. So just kind of a teaser there as far as what we have on our side, but definitely just want to thank everybody for positive feedback. I've gotten a few messages and a few nice encouraging things that I meant a lot. So thank you to everybody. Appreciate you coming out and listening. And man, I can't wait to do it again already.
All right, brother. I really appreciate everything you did for us. Kind of an evolving, you know, things we were able to do, things that we like you said, we could improve on. But everything we did was kind of always changing, always getting better, always maybe doing it a little bit different. And that's something I'll never forget, specifically that on-field thing we did at South Dakota State when you had your whole family there. That was pretty special. We had a lot of fun, obviously, that weekend. All right, Trev, thanks for your contributions all year. Guys, thank you so much for listening. This has been a super jumbo edition of the podcast. So if you're still with us, man, we really appreciate it. There are two big ways to support this pod. Number one, subscribe and tell like 10 friends about it, 10 Bison fan friends Other than that, become a VIP member over at Bison Report. We've got a major special coming up for you guys soon. Now that the 2 months for a dollar special is over, keep your eyes peeled for that. National champs, folks. Go Bison.